This is EcoShock Radio. All environment, all the time. Get more info on the web at ecoshock.org.
The birth of Gaia.
Lots of Greens use the word Gaia, spelled G-A-I-A, to say that the Earth itself has powers and purposes. Some return to the old classical idea that a planet may be a type of God. Others are more scientific, believing the combination of life forms with their physical systems act almost like a living machine to find balance and to preserve life. Let us return to the scientist who proposed the idea of Gaia in the late 1970s, Britain's James Lovelock. It is ironic that many environmentalists refer to Lovelock's theory of Gaia without realizing the scientist made his argument out of hostility to environmentalism. You may be surprised to hear his views at the time. Lovelock feels that pollution is a natural result of life. He says Earth has a long history of radioactivity, within which human nuclear events are minor, no concern. That so-called experts have shown that blowing off all our nuclear weapons will not seriously hurt life. And that a self-regulating system of life will adapt to any changes that humans make. And so, laws against pollution are useless and unnatural. Gaia will save us from our polluting selves. Of course, there is also much to learn from James Lovelock, especially from his scientific learning. We will review the original book from him, titled Gaia, A New Look at Life on Earth. It was published by Oxford University Press in 1979. This book was Dr. Lovelock's first foray into the wide public debate, and this edition precedes his later involvement in the ecological story. Although there are applications for the Gaia theory, social as well as scientific, we will begin by looking at the anti-environmental bias. The jacket blurb tells us Jim Lovelock is an independent scientist working from his home in the country. He worked with NASA since 1974 as an advisor and has also been a visiting professor in cybernetics. It says he is a specialist in gas chromatography, and his invention, the electron capture detector, has revolutionized environmental analysis. The book might also have been titled, How I Founded Environmentalism. Lovelock more or less claims to have founded modern environmentalism, as his device enabled the measurements of the minute quantities of pesticides that Rachel Carson wrote about in her classic book, Silent Spring. Let's hear it in Lovelock's own words. Quote, I was fortunate to work briefly with A.J.P. Martin, who developed, among other things, the important chemical analytical technique of gas chromatography. During that time, I added some embellishments which extended the range of his invention. One of these was the so-called electron capture detector. This device is notable for its exquisite sensitivity in the detection of traces of certain chemical substances. This sensitivity first made possible the discovery that pesticide residues were present in all creatures of the Earth, from penguins in Antarctica to the milk of nursing mothers in the USA. It was this discovery that facilitated the writing of Rachel Carson's immensely influential book, Silent Spring, by providing the evidence needed to justify her concern over the damage done to the biosphere by the ubiquitous presence of these toxic chemicals. The electron capture detector has continued to reveal minute but significant quantities of other toxic chemicals in places where they ought not to be. Among these intruders are PAN, peroxacetyl nitrate, a toxic component of Los Angeles smog, the PCBs, polychlorobiphenyls, in the remote natural environment, and most recently, in the atmosphere at large, the chlorofluorocarbons and nitrous oxide, substances which are thought to deplete the strength of ozone in the atmosphere. End quote. The Shell Connection. In the preface, we also discover Lovelock's gratitude to Sidney Epton of Shell Research Limited. When Congress canceled the Martian exploration, and therefore Lovelock's funding, in 1965, he found funding from Shell. So he was paid by Big Oil, and Shell is also a major chemical company. As such, Lovelock studied the impact of fossil fuels as pollution, beginning in the mid-1960s. Unfortunately, Lovelock also ended up justifying any amount of pollution, all to be fixed up by the proposed superagent called Gaia. But he denies Shell funding had any effect on his research or his book. The idea that an oil and chemicals company would hire a particular scientist to study the effect of their own pollution begs many questions. As we shall see, he comes out against pollution laws as silly and non-scientific, certainly a bonus for Shell. Secondly, the influence of the society in which I live and work, as he says, turns out to be far from minor. His scientific long-range views, based on the timetable of the stars and operations of the billions of years, allow him to say that even if all humans are destroyed by pollution, other life forms will survive quite nicely. Not to worry. It's all this sort of scientific rationale that feels comfortable with massive atomic explosions as natural events, even if they happen to occur in densely populated cities, that environmentalists and most sane humans object to. Why don't we understand life? Lovelock was challenged by the idea of a Mars probe looking for life or evidence of previous life. How would one know, especially if completely different life forms existed, what to measure? Let us join Lovelock in his exploration of how we know something is alive, again from his 1979 book on Gaia. Quote, "I expected to discover, somewhere in the scientific literature, a comprehensive definition of life as a physical process, on which one could base the design of life detection experiments, but I was surprised to find how little had been written about the nature of life itself. Data galore had been accumulated on every conceivable aspect of living species, from their outermost to their innermost parts. But in the whole vast encyclopedia of facts, the crux of the matter, life itself, was almost totally ignored. This seeming conspiracy of silence may have been due, in part, to the division of science into separate disciplines, with each specialist assuming that someone else has done the job. But the most probable cause of our closed minds on the subject is that we already have a very rapid, highly efficient life recognition program in our inherited set of instincts. Our recognition of living things, both animal and vegetable, is instant and automatic, and our fellow creatures in the animal world appear to have the same facility. This powerful and effective, but unconscious process of recognition, no doubt originally evolved as a survival factor. Anything living may be edible, lethal, friendly, aggressive, or a potential mate, all questions of prime significance for our welfare and continued existence. However, our automatic recognition system appears to have paralyzed our capacity for conscious thought about a definition of life. For why should we need to define what is obvious and unmistakable in all its manifestations thanks to our built-in program? Perhaps for that very reason, it is an automatic process operating without conscious understanding, like the autopilot of an aircraft." End quote. The master biologist Edmund O. Wilson explored this recognition of life in another way. He coined the word biophilia as our innate connection and love for all living things. Dr. Lovelock finally bases his definition of life on the second law of thermodynamics. In his adaptation from physics, life captures energy from a flow, uses some of it, and releases the rest in a degraded form, including excretion. Lovelock concludes that pollution, whether dung from a cow or carbon to the atmosphere from machines, is inevitable and a natural part of nature's law. So it is entirely natural to pump out toxic gases from industrial smokestacks. The sky is just nature's toilet. His second argument about how to detect life is based on chemical laws. Certain chemicals and gases will eventually find a balance, beyond which they may not change much. Yet Lovelock claims that the Earth's atmosphere is far from the expected chemical balance. It has more nitrogen and oxygen, for example, than would be expected. He finds the improbable mixture of Earth's atmosphere comes from the biological interference, and in fact is maintained by biological life. Remove all life, and the atmosphere would change dramatically, looking more like that of Venus or Mars. Therefore, an analysis of the atmosphere of other planets, even when done from a distance, might be able to determine whether life exists there.
EcoShock Radio, broadcast and podcast. Find us on the web at ecoshock.org.